So, Susie. Oh,
So, Lizzie.
wait, I got you on the snaps. We're
We are
doing
so
so
not
well.
in sync today.
And yet we're actually doing really well.
Welcome to So Psychological, the podcast where two friends investigate the world of psych.
All the analysis, none of the professionalism.
Hi, and welcome to So Psychological. I'm Susie Jenkins, and this is my co-host, Anna Ace Crusher.
I'm all about that net game.
And we're going to talk today about game set murder. So why don't you start us off with a summary?
Sounds good. Our flashback takes place with young Sean and young Gus playing Battleship outside Sean's house. Gus just can't seem to score a hit against Sean, so he accuses him of cheating and they begin to fight. Henry breaks them up and gives them a reminder of what friends should be like to each other. But just as he settled the issues, he sees Sean really has cheated, so he grounds him while also restricting his play to be uneven for the next month so he'll know how Gus felt. Present-day Sean is bored with Gus away at a work retreat, so he goes to SBPD to scrounge up a case. He glimpses a man in a tracksuit and details of his missing daughter and former stalker on a case file, and he quickly schmoozes his way onto the case to find Marina Sirtis, who is also a known tennis star. But Sean doesn't want to do this alone, so he contacts Gus, who is miserable but toughing it through the retreat, to win favor for a better sales route. Sean has already set up the grandma in need excuse, and Gus is free to leave to tend the emergency. They go to her home, noticing the invasive bedroom camera because of the stalker, and pick up a few other clues as well, such as a potential secret boyfriend. Now, down at the tennis club, this is just short of confirmed when another player tells Sean about Marina not having focus on the court, but on the fellas.
She was boy crazy.
She was. So while there, they discover a second address for Deanna. When they go to find her at the new address, assuming she's hiding away with her secret boyfriend, they encounter Lassie and Jules and a whole slew of police who are taking photos and collecting evidence. Deanna is there, but in a coma as a victim of attempted murder. The trophy Sean noticed missing from the crime scene and that was then found in her former stalker Felix's car. Of course, Sean and Jules both feel this doesn't match up, so Juliet passes the case file to Sean to see if he can figure it out. Sean's struggling finding new information, so he takes the file to Henry and asks for help. Henry reminds him that files are inherently limited and encourages Sean to rely on his own talents to find the lead. Sean is now able to notice a discrepancy between the shadow in the pictures and what he recalls from the scene, as well as the difference in the lights from the restaurant across the street. Back at the police station, Sean and Gus reveal the criminal is in their midst. The crime scene photographer was a former secret boyfriend and couldn't handle the rejection. Having discovered there was evidence of him in the room, he retook the photos to exclude it and used the new ones in the case files. With the case solved, Gus is able to return to the retreat just as it is ending, with his compassion for matters at home being rewarded with the sought-after.
So in this episode, we get introduced to a new character dynamic, a new trio, if you will.
Yeah, because up to this point, we've mostly been talking about like duos. We've been talking about the way two people interact. But now we have like, can we call it a triangle of frustration?
The trio of miscommunication, Henry, Carlton, and Sean.
Yeah.
Now, when we see Henry and Carlton, they meet, Henry kind of randomly shows up, to give Sean some of his stuff back.
Right.
Get your stuff out of my house. And Carlton is there and he's like, oh, look, it's this particular type of fishing rod. And the conversation continues to where they're going to meet up the next morning at 5 a.m. or if you're Carlton, 4:15, they're going to meet up at the docks to go fishing. And it kind of, it kind of looks like they're really going to hit it off. They're both like really structured by the book kind of guys.
They're both detectives who value all of those structured, like you said, things.
Yes.
Order, time, all of the things. Responsibility.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like they're really going to hit it off. And then the next day they go fishing and hook them, cook them, and eat them. Is that what Carlton says?
Yep. Well, they even plan that second time fishing. He brings in Sean's old hat. So he's like passing along all the things that Sean didn't use for fishing.
Hey, is that my hat? Yeah. And Sean sees the photo on Henry's fridge and is like, you have a picture of Carlton on your fridge?
It's a picture of the fish.
He didn't even know Carlton was in it. Right? So it seems like two peas in a pod here to me.
Right. Because if you look on that refrigerator, like I paused it right then to see if there was any picture of any other kind on there. And there was like a postcard from Maui, another postcard from another place that was just like a beautiful scenic something. But there were like postcards. There was nothing like a picture of any other person anywhere.
Nothing of like sentimental value.
Or at least representative of people in his life. So obviously the picture is there and Carlton is the only other person on this refrigerator.
That I had not caught. That's awesome. And you can tell immediately Sean is so jealous.
It throws him off his game a little bit.
Yeah.
Like even when Lassie's taking the fishing pole because he appreciates it and he knows what it is. And, you know, Henry's very impressed by this. And so there's that way that they could bond as well, you know, because they have it in common. It's not just like, oh, we could get along, so let me try this thing. We already have this appreciation. And it's like Sean, as he's walking away, he kind of can't get over it. So he can't even figure out the words. So he's like, the pole thingy, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of messing with his ability to be witty and quick and, you know, all of the normal Sean things.
Yeah, it really does.
Looking at that picture. He's like so distracted by the picture that it's like you almost think, is he going to forget what he was there for?
Yeah, it's so ironic that Sean is jealous of Henry and Carlton. So I don't know if he's jealous of Henry spending time with Carlton or if he's jealous of Carlton spending time with Henry, because I don't think that he would want to spend that type of time with either one of them himself.
Yeah. And for someone who likes spontaneity, this change of routine for the people around him is really messing with him.
It really, really is. But they don't seem to hit it off as well as it looks like they're going to.
Right.
Like towards the end of the episode, it's like, you can tell Carlton's like, oh, I'm so glad to not be around your dad right now.
Yeah, like this is almost like this little bonding moment between Carlton and Sean, you know, because Carlton is admitting this was hard. There's an aspect to Henry that is difficult. I mean, he says he sucked the joy out of one of the things he loved.
Which is just so deliciously ironic that Carlton would say that. So that brings us to the scene with Henry and Sean, where Sean has gone back to Henry as usual to help solve the case. Maybe this has given Sean a little bit of a perspective change. He starts out a little bit combative. I'm not a kid. I'm not here to play games. And Henry says, just trust me.
Right. I love and this scene.
I do too. I'm not one that that kind of verbiage resonates with me. Because I am one to trust. So if somebody's going, just trust me, I'm like, you have to prove to me that I can trust you if I'm not trusting you. But for Sean, I think that it's so appropriate in this moment. Like Henry has proven himself. What is this, episode 13? So he's proven himself that we, the audience, have seen 13 times to show up, to be there, to help Sean do what Sean does best. But Sean's still wanting to combat it, even though he's gone there for help. And I love this. I love that scene.
All right. What I love about this scene is, like you said, Henry's saying, trust me. But what is he saying trust me about? He's asking him to trust him in leading him through the exercises that helps Sean do things, honestly, the Sean way. Because when he comes in, Sean is looking at the case files. He's doing all the things the way, in a way, the way his dad would have wanted him to do it, the way a real policeman does it. So he's looking at the case files and he's studying it like actual police work would be. And when he's saying, trust me, he's of course, he's doing the, like the hats in the room kind of thing. And Sean is always thinking, oh, you're trying to make me do something. But he's like, trust me. And what he does is he's encouraging Sean to do things his way, to use what he knows he possesses, to use his talents. And he does it. Henry does this in such a calm, gentle way.
Mm-hmm. It really is so gentle the way Henry does it.
Where he's, yeah, where he, it, like in the past, be like, come on, just listen to me. Come on, just, you know, this is like, no, calm down. Trust me. And he encourages Sean to do things the Sean way, which is such a flip from where he's always been. And what happens is that's how then Sean, he's relying on his memory instead of just the facts in the file. And that's how he figures out the discrepancies in the pictures. And so I love that, because we're finally seeing Henry actually encouraging this psychic detective thing in a way without any resistance. And it's funny because you see that with Carlton, like you said, everything should match up, but it doesn't.
No.
And with Sean, things have always been, you know, full of tension. At, you know, even when they're at their best, there's still that underlying not sure what the other person is thinking kind of thing going on here. But there is this beautiful moment here where we get that gentleness and the approval and the appreciation and the recognition, which is something he hasn't felt he's gotten. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Carlton, who should have that automatically because of the similarities, is sent away or runs away practically because.
Yeah, I love, like I said, I feel like this is a big perspective change. Like Henry might be aggravated with Sean, but he appreciates something new about Sean having spent time with Carlton. And Carlton might be aggravated with Sean, but Carlton appreciates something new about Sean having spent time with Henry.
Right. And I do think you get this beautiful thing, because once Sean figures it out, instead of Henry having that kind of grimace look like, ah, you just used me for more help, Henry actually gives Sean a high five. They high five each other as he's walking out. So it's recognized from both ends. And then the other thing is, like, at the end when Sean and Lassie are meeting, and Lassie's just so frustrated with Henry, you get that look of almost like satisfaction from Sean. And I think it's like what you said, in a way, there's this recognition of, oh, somebody else gets my perspective on this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's almost a like, okay, yeah, you get it. But then part of it too, I think, is also, haha, but I get my dad back.
I absolutely agree with that.
And I think it's this multi-layered subconscious, like just satisfaction. Whereas if you were to ask him, he might say, oh, it's because now he gets why my life is so hard. But the reality is, I think it's deeper than that, because of the jealousy we saw through the whole thing.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. Yeah.
When we were rewatching this episode, you and I both commented to each other how the grandmother excuse that Gus has.
Yes.
How it feels like it's come up before or will come up again through the series. Right?
Yeah. But is it Gus's excuse or is it Sean's excuse for Gus?
Well, it's Sean's excuse for Gus. But I decided, you know what, because it does have that familiarity, I decided to actually look and see, because I couldn't pinpoint in my head which other episodes that excuse was used. Because we know that he's used the cat excuse to get Gus out of things.
Yes.
And he used the grandma excuse here. And it just feels like in my memory that there's other places. And you'd said the same. So I decided to actually look. And I went through the transcripts of every Psych episode.
Did you really?
I really did.
Wow.
Let me just say, Command F is your friend. So I decided to look for where were any other times that grandma was referenced by Gus, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. So in this episode, we have...
Are you serious?
I'm so serious. So in this episode, we have where, you know, it's Gus's grandma slipped in the tub and broke her hip. And then later, he's got to go again because she broke her other hip.
Teaching line dancing.
And then the third time he has to go because then now she's dislocated both of her shoulders, you know, because she was doing pull-ups on the traction bar, right?
Yes.
So that is the grandma excuse. The only other time that Gus even references, where Gus references a grandma or a reference about Gus's grandma is mentioned, is in season 2, episode 10, Gus's dad may have killed an old guy, and it's not even made by Gus or Sean. It's made by his mother when she's like, she said she called Nana because she wants to get her to take care of Gus. And Gus is complaining because he's a grown person. And he's like, I don't need looking after, you know, like she's in a nursing home even. So we do know his grandma's in a nursing home. And then of course, his dad just says, we hear you, son. We hear you.
We hear you.
And he's not listening. The only other time Gus makes a reference even close to grandma is in season 5, episode 11, In Plain Fright, when he just comments that the candy, the ribbon candy on the table is grandma candy. But that's not even his grandma specific. So I will say there were a few mentions.
I'm so shocked by this. Like, yeah. I feel like I know so much about Gus's grandma.
But we don't. That is what we know. Now, we know that in the pilot episode, when, you know, Sean meets Officer Allen, who is the superstitious one. So then in season 1, episode 4, he mentions her grandma as the one who's communicating him when he's in the evidence locker, right?
Yeah.
In season 1, episode 3, of course, it was a grandmother's ring that was the main theft in the episode. In episode 7, Juliet mentions that her grandma also collects figurines when she notices Lassie's figurines that he's getting for his ex-wife. And then in season 2, episode 12, in the flashback, we get Sean with his granddad. And his granddad is encouraging, we're going to look at the girls because they're amazing magical creatures. And he knows that because he says Sean's grandmother is an example of this. Other than this, like, there are really very few references to any grandma of any kind. Now
I thought they referenced Gus's grandma's jerk chicken recipe, too.
If they did, they did not use the word grandma or grandmother.
Okay.
So if they did, they phrased it in a different way that I could not search on. So maybe, listeners, if you know where there's other Nana clues, let us know. Now, Gus mistakes his boss's grandma for his boss's wife in a picture in one episode. In one episode, Sean foresees a grandma as one of the clues in trying to explain the Santa that is committing crimes. The coach says that his grandma can run faster than all of in the football episode. In the Bollywood episode, The guest star mentions that his grandma cooks her food quite spicy. And then one of the members of La Capella, when they pull out their windbreakers in High Top Fade Out, mentions that they smell like his grandma's feet. Other than that, we really, most of the references to grandma, and there still are very few, are related to the ring that Sean will give Juliet. Because that was Sean's grandmother's ring. So very little. So we have this feeling that we know the whole family of Sean and Gus. But in some ways, it's actually quite limited. That's my tidbit for today.
I'm so surprised. I'm just going, I really did. I thought we knew more. But yeah. Maybe it's like the emotional impact of this episode that makes us feel like we know more.
I'm wondering if this means that we take our grandmas for granted. So folk, if you have a grandparent that is still alive, that you have good relationships with, why don't you ring them up? Let them know you're there. Let them know you care. Find out something about their life. They probably have a lot more interesting stories that you have yet to hear.
Oh, I bet that's so
they
true.
May be a line dancing octogenarian, just like So another thing that we notice has happening in this episode is we're seeing some development, say, with Jules and Sean.
Yes. One of the best first season Jules and Sean episodes.
Absolutely. Because we've seen Sean throwing the flirts out and her kind of responding coyly, but not really engaging too much in it. And we've seen her give looks that show things, but she kind of throws the flirt out here this time too.
Yes.
In a way that surprises Sean even. And his expression after she says that they cock-a-doodle-do is priceless because he's almost like,
oh,
she just like flirted with me too. And he has this appreciation that she's like giving that humor that he gives as well.
Yep.
And so we definitely see something happening here. What are your thoughts on that?
I think this is just a great scene for their development in the first season. First off, because we see Juliet, she feels like she's just being unheard. She knows that Felix Alvarez could not, because she knows what somebody who's just done dialysis looks and feels like. She's got firsthand experience with this, and yet she feels like she's just being completely blown off. And the person that she goes to is Sean.
Right.
And I love that. Like, when you feel undervalued, you want to go to somebody that's going to make you feel valued. And she goes to Sean. And I think that says a lot at just the very beginning of this scene. And then just that whole scene plays out where he's like thinking it's a secret meeting. And she's like, no, we're just away from prying eyes.
He makes it very like clandestine.
Yes.
To use code names and such. Like, you know, he'll always play with something he's given.
Absolutely. And she stays on track there at the very beginning. We're just away from prying eyes. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as she knows that he's got her back.
Yeah.
And she knows that he's going to help. That's when she turns around and she says, roosters don't cackle, they cock-a-doodle-do. And in that moment, like, you can see it on Sean's face. Like, in that moment, something has transitioned there where the banter game has been stepped up a notch.
Right. There's actual give and take instead of just kind of Sean throwing something out there and hoping it lands. I love how she comes back and she, you know, like you said, she confirms that they're on the same page in terms of the investigation. And then she comes back and she's like, one more thing. Because not only is that like, okay, now you've got my back, I can throw in the banter, but it means she was paying attention to that banter to begin with.
Yes.
So she was actually engaged with it.
And that she probably thought it was funny, but had to kick it up a notch.
Yeah, she was engaged with it from the beginning and then just had to stay focused. but then could kind of throw back. And so you do get a lot more give and take with this.
Yeah, I absolutely love that scene with Sean and Jules.
Now, another place that we're seeing some growth and more give and take, I would say, would be with Gus, Sean and Gus.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. Gus is going to lay supine.
He is going to test to Sean's knowledge of that word, though.
As he should.
And as he lays down, what flair with those legs flying up and collapsing down straight. That is great physical comedy on Dulé Hill's part. So what I really appreciated is like totally happy to join along the investigation this time. Now, of course, he's using it to try to get out of something he's not wanting to do, which is the work retreat. But at the same time, he does feel obligated because he really wants that
new better route.
Right. And so he's kind of torn, but it's like the second he can get out of there, he's ready to go. And so it's the kind of the first time you don't really see a fight between the two of them. The only time we see a fight between them, and I use the word fight very loosely, people.
Yes, as brothers fight.
Is when he's mentioning the Airwolf Windbreaker. And then near the end, he references back to the what we experience as a flashback, that battleship game. But nothing in relation to the case, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're working so in sync together in this episode.
Yes.
And yet we still don't lose that banter that we love so much about their friendship, where they can kind of rib each other or throw out all the different references or follow each other's train of thoughts where nobody else could predict where they would be going mentally, you know?
Yeah.
We get to see them better functioning as partners, but not at the cost of those things that we love.
That's one of the things that I'm always impressed by with Gus, is that he can take Sean's joke and he always either rolls with it or he adds a little bit of more spice to it or more flavor. Yeah. And I love that. I'm like, that's a skill that I would like to be able to hone better, to take someone else's humor and just be able to help other people appreciate it.
Adding to someone's humor, right?
Yes. So
that it's more understood and visible.
Yeah. Like Gus does for Sean.
I really appreciate how this show is so good at trying to be consistent with their backstory, even though it's a really lighthearted show, but trying to be also consistent with the history of the relationships. And so that's why they're not dropping these things just because they get a little more serious over here.
Mm-hmm.
Gus and Sean can still have this banter because that's going to be natural for their characters if they're, you know, more realistic characters who have a history together. And so I really appreciate that.
And it does create the perfect environment for Gus to say to Sean, I already missed the paper pulp trust exercise.
You know, but I love how this episode we get, Gus is always trying to have that last line that leads to the drama.
Yes.
Because Sean says that one line and it's full of the drama. And actually the show does do that dun, dun, dun. They put that sound cue in there for us, which is so great. And he's trying it out all the time. You know, none of them work. But again, Sean could be totally making fun of him, like, dude, this isn't your job. I always say the last line. And instead he's like, kind of being honest, no, that one did feel forced, you know, or whatever. And I love that, how he's trying to play into that. And Sean isn't necessarily shutting him down. He's just agreement. Yeah, that one didn't work.
I have some topics on that for the aftercast that I will bring to the table.
I wait on bated breath.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
In this episode, Sean walks into Deanna Sirtis's room and he looks into her jewelry box and he goes, well, those surely meet the four C's. And I was like, can you tell the four C's without like doing tests? Can you just by looking at something, can you tell the four C's?
And the four C's are?
I haven't pulled up here. And the site that comes up first, Robbins Brothers. Another nod to psych, because that's where the gentleman bought his bride-to-be's ring. So they are cut, color, clarity, and carat. So the value of a ring, the value of a diamond, can be measured by those four things: the cut, color, clarity, and carat weight. So I looked it up to see if you could, at home, if a diamond is real or fake. He does say that one of the rings is, that he can tell it's fake because the gold plating is flaking off of it, which that you could definitely tell.
Yeah. But the four C's would be definitely to the stones, right?
The four C's would be in reference to the stones. Yeah. Okay. So the way you could tell if a diamond is real or fake at home would be the water test, the fog test. So hold the ring between two fingers, breathe on it with a puff of air, and a light fog will form on the diamond because of moisture and heat in your breath. If the fog dissipates right away, the diamond is real. If it takes several seconds for the fog to disperse, it's likely fake. The setting can also be if it's real or fake. It says to heat the stone and see if it shatters. So let's hope one that if it shatters, it's not real.
And also never usable again.
Yeah, it's gone. So there is one that does only involve visual acuity, and that would be the sparkle test, but you still would have to take the stone or the ring, whatever the stone is set in, and hold it up to a light and watch how the stone refracts the light. A real diamond reflects white light extremely well, providing a lot of sparkle. And that's one way you can tell the difference. But still, you can't just look at it in the box and be like, those meet the four C's.
Yeah, I think that would be really difficult. And even some of the tests you said, they would also be difficult because you might have to remove the stone from the setting to do that.
And this would just be like these are the standards for how you can tell if your diamond is real at home.
But could you not do a hardness test?
Well, still, he would have to take it out of the box. Do scratch it on a window?
No, like they have.
Or smash it with a hammer. Tools.
No, they have tools that you just like. It looks like almost like an electronic screwdriver or something, and it or a thermometer, and it touches the surface and it can determine the hardness of a mineral or a stone. But not that you would have
a tool.
Not that you would have one just like in your pocket at all times.
This says the scratch test from like years ago, like they've much improved the fake stones that the scratch test is no longer a viable test.
But one of the things that gets me about this, like you were wondering, can you actually see it? Would he be able to catch those four C's? I want to know how Sean knew about the four C's. That seems like a very Gus thing to know.
I also had the same thought. Like his brain is just chock full of information. But
when
still,
would he have needed that information? Why? Where he would have gained it and then put it back in that bank.
Yeah, why does he know the four C's?
It's a mystery.
It is a mystery. We've come to the end of our podcast episode. Is there anything else you wanted to throw in before we wrap it up?
Yeah. So you know how I did my fun fact on the grandmas?
Uh-huh.
I kind of did forget there is another grandma reference in this episode, but it's not Gus's grandma. It's Felix's. Felix, the stalker, when he's brought to the police station, it's his grandma who's with him, and it's his grandma who testifies to the fact that he's a changed person.
Oh, grandmas are the best.
Yeah. The other thing is when they're first investigating her apartment, and you mentioned the jewelry box.
Uh-huh.
And how Sean is able to recognize that the one ring is fake because the gold is flaking off the plating, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that he goes to show Gus, and the first thing Gus does is put it on his finger?
Yep.
And it's not that he just puts it on. He's like jamming it on. Like jamming it on.
And then he can't get it off. He's like pulling it off with his teeth.
I know. I mean, that is like, why did Gus do that? I don't know why Gus did it, but I know that Dulé did it because it was hilarious and genius.
That's very true.
So the last thing was, again, in the apartment when they're reenacting the crime and just run with it. And then that allows Sean to give his spiel of whatever he's going to say. And then, of course, Gus gives up. And every time they terrify a person. I love that. I think it's just so funny.
It's so funny. It's such a great running joke.
So was there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I did. And I don't know if I thought it at the time, but watching it back, you know, 15 years later, there's something about the way Sean jumps on that chair in the psych office. And I'm like, is that a reference to Tom Cruise jumping on the couch that I just didn't catch 15 years ago? Like, it looks so similar to how I remember the Tom Cruise jumping thing look. And it seems like such a random thing to do when you get excited to just jump on the chair.
Yeah. But he does do a lot of physical comedy where he's like jumping on tables or chairs or moving around or changing positions when he's making points. So I don't know. It would be interesting to find out.
It would be very interesting to find out. So, favorite quotes?
Okay, so it's not a like super witty quote, but it's one that I say it's something I always want to say, but I always stop myself before I quote it because I feel like the people I talk to really wouldn't get the reference. But when somebody comes up and just says my name or like, hello, Lizzie, in a funny way or whatever the situation is, I kind of just want to go, hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hello. I love that.
That's so awesome.
I just want to call everybody Tom and greet people like that. What's your favorite quote?
I would definitely know if you said that to me. My favorite is Juliet. And she says that her aunt after dialysis is knocked down, drag out, winter bear tired. Just because it's just such a great turn of phrase. Like, we all know what winter bear tired is. It's like when you get to that point where you're like, no matter what's going on, I literally could not keep my eyes open any longer. I'm winter bear tired.
It's such a great phrase.
Yes. And, you know, and that scene, I know I talked about it earlier. It's just perfection to me. Like so many of her lines in that. I don't have a cackle in my repertoire. I love it. I just love it all.
Yeah. It's great.
So that's all we have for today. So tune in next week for our aftercast for this episode, where we'll be talking through some of the themes of the episode. We would love to hear from you. Bye.
We really would. Bye-bye. I was waving with both hands, like they can see.
Well, that's
waving to the microphone.
Bye, Tom.
Bye, Tom.
This has been So Psychological, You've Heard It Both Ways.
I hear that.